Good morning and welcome to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with my co-host Tim Henney. The Mountain Life is a weekly show about health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle in general. Today in the program, we'll talk air quality, idling, emission controls, and really anything else that Summit County Health Department Director Rich Bullough, whose knowledge is vast, brings up that affects our health and well-being here in Summit County.
Good morning, Lynn. Then we'll follow that talk up with an interesting conversation with some high school kids about what it takes to compete in academic decathlon, where Park City High seems to do extremely well each year.
Yes, they're headed to the national competition. And I spoke with these kids last week while you were on assignment somewhere. And so it's a taped interview, but it's really interesting about, we've heard about academic decathlon for ages here in Park City. Park City High School always seems to make it to nationals, sewing up national championships on many occasions. And I've never really heard from the kids what the ins and outs are of the competition. It's really fascinating.
And the format's a little different than you might assume. Also, the way that they structure the competition, they have kids from different academic levels. And they compete in those levels. And, so it's not just all your top tier brightest kids who, take all AP classes and are at the top of their class. By that standard, they want to, a representative sampling from each school, I guess.
Exactly. And this is, they do talk about that at length during our conversation. And it is interesting because, as we know, some kids, they don't always get straight A's.
Right.
They might do well in school, but they might not be at the top. But they have lots to offer in terms of this type of competition.
Right.
So I found that really interesting. So stay tuned for that conversation. We'll be back after these words with Rich Bullough. This is The Mountain Life, only in Park City, only on KPCW. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Hi, this is Catherine Simos, president of Grand Valley Bank, Frontier Branch in Park City, a proud supporter of KPCW. Our team can help you with all of your banking needs, from deposit accounts to business lending. We have one branch in Park City and two branches in Heber and Midway, Heber Valley Bank. GrandValleyBank.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with Tim Henney. Well, air quality and water quality seem to always make the news, and each time they come up, it leaves listeners with questions about things like ozone versus particulate matter, about the greatest contributors to poor air quality, about the new things we hear about from wood smoke to vehicle emissions. Here to clarify points about air and water quality and many other things is the director of Summit County Health Department, Rich Bullough. And welcome to you, Rich. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Rich, how long have you been focused on health issues? Has this been your career since you were in college? Was that the thing you were looking at?
The academic decathlon is probably a good transition. I bounced all over the place, and consequently, while I didn't know it at the time, I picked up little tidbits of information around the place. I actually have an undergraduate in fisheries biology and a master's in physiology and a PhD in human nutrition.
Not unrelated.
That whole time I did public health stuff.
And when did you become the director of Summit County Health Department?
3.5 years ago.
And what were you – how did you segue into that?
Well, I worked actually for the Utah Department of Health, and I was director of a couple of programs there. Really kind of started the Utah Arthritis Program and then built an obesity and healthy weight program and then later was director of the diabetes program.
So 25 years ago, looking at Utah and Salt Lake and Park City, and I'm going to try to bring this into Park City in particular, Summit County, let's say. So let's keep it to Summit County.
Okay.
Looking from 25 years ago, are you surprised by the issues that we face today, or is there a surprising issue that you're just like, wow, I never saw that coming?
Well, you know, one thing I never saw coming, frankly, is a good thing, and that is the priority that we set, not just in the Park City area, but Snyderville Basin and Summit County in general, the priority that we've set for free or affordable recreation. I mean, it's huge. And we have recreation centers. We have a trail system that is unrivaled. We bought, when I was in graduate school in Colorado and Jeremy Ranch went broke, we bought a lot in Jeremy Ranch. And I never anticipated having a trail system in Jeremy Ranch. And so living out there now, and I jump on Flying Dog Trail right at the end of the street, I shake my head and can't believe what has been built. And working adjacent to Round Valley, it's the same thing. I ski out there at lunch or ride my bike at lunch, and I always remind myself to not take it for granted. These things aren't random. A lot of people have worked hard. There's been a strategic approach to building, an environment that really supports our health and supports our well-being. And that can't be underestimated. That's a huge thing.
So that's a great answer to and a different spin on kind of what I thought you might say. But looking at it again and saying, was there something that you heard back then that you are now looking at and going, wow, that those experts, that lone voice 25 years ago really nailed that, and now we've got a problem on our hands or a challenge on our hands?
I actually had an interesting experience. I did a postdoc with a guy by the name of Jim Hill, and Jim is probably one of the globe's foremost experts on obesity. And he works for National Institutes of Health. And when I was sitting in one of the very first lab meetings when I joined his lab, I recall him saying obesity is our next emerging issue. And I scoffed at it, frankly. And that was nearly 30 years ago. And here we are. So that's probably – and you said hold it to Summit County. But I do want to focus a little bit – on some issues specific to Summit County related to that. The perception is that we are very healthy, and most of the reports that come out indicate that we're one of the healthiest counties in the country. We've honed down a little bit and actually looked at zip codes. And by area within Summit County, by zip code area, there is a largely diverse population with respect to health risks, healthy behaviors, unhealthy behaviors, those kinds of things. And so one of the things we've done as a department is tried to identify where those areas are in the county that might be able to benefit from strategic initiatives focused on increased physical activity, improved nutrition, those kinds of things. And if you look at the entire population, yeah, we're pretty darn healthy here, and part of that is our environment. Another part of it is that healthy people move here. It isn't necessarily that we've created the health. We attract healthy people in part because of the environment and our recreation. If you start looking at some areas in the eastern part of the county, those areas are more traditional in that there are multi-generational families there. Those families haven't moved here because of our trail system. Mm-hmm. And they tend sometimes to model a little bit different behavior with respect to physical activity, nutrition, et cetera. The eastern part of the county does have a higher risk for chronic diseases like diabetes and hypertension. We have a hypertension project that we're working on in eastern Summit County. So that's one of the things we're trying to do is to not use a broad brush to describe the county, but to rather look at specific communities within the county and try to target the needs there.
Well, that's interesting because as we hear the national statistics for our county being so healthy, it's heartening to know that that you are identifying certain pockets of the county that may need more education. And I wonder in general, we see these movies like Fed Up that screened here just last week or the week before, I think. And the level of education, oftentimes they go into the Deep South to illustrate how little education, how little they really know about the right foods to put into our body. But here in Summit County, when you are, even if you're in one of those pockets where there is obesity and diabetes, is the general level of education higher than some of the things portrayed in these movies we see?
Yeah, we actually – one of the really interesting pieces of information that we've gained is that it isn't just what people know. It's what people have access to. And in this county where we tend to think we have really universal access to good, healthy foods, that doesn't necessarily hold true. And we have specific pockets in the county that are you know, for lack of a better word, food deserts. And they, the, you know, a lot of processed food, relatively little access to healthy foods, fresh fruits, vegetables, those kinds of things. We do have – I don't want to set a negative tone. We have some really, really progressive people, and not just in the western part of the county. North Summit in particular has a very progressive individual who's working with the school foods and does a lot of foods from scratch, mm-hmm. Recipes from scratch. Oakley has now got a farmer's market, and there's some really innovative things going on there. And we've got a very small part to play in that, but we do have a part to play in it. And I think, you know, there's a trend across the county that people are engaging. And we're doing a lot of things in Summit County that we don't – in the Summit County Health Department that we don't have to do. And I know one of the things we're going to talk about later is air and water quality. Air quality in particular, people, they have mobilized. And we have an engaged community that wants action, despite the fact that we're not regulated, we're not mandated. And that's a really great thing. And I actually sent an email to Summit County Council a little bit ago thanking them for their support, because we're in a position as a health department, and I'm in the position as a health director that is unusual in that we have support. And when we identify an initiative, we generally have very strong support from the council, the county manager, and the community to move forward. That's a great environment to work in.
Right. So as you've been talking here, you were the director of a diabetes program. You talk a lot about septic systems, and
yeah.
Now we're about to talk about air quality. Do you feel like as the director of a health department, you have to have sort of a mini master's degree in each of these areas to really be able to guide the whole county?
Well, probably a very mini master's degree. I have really good staff, and mm-hmm. and so I know – the reality of it is I know kind of these issues on a superficial level. I have, you know, nursing director, health promotion director. We've got a new environmental health director. We've got programs that do specific services like WIC, and we have a WIC director and early intervention, and really a comprehensive staff that indeed they are experts in the topic. And so – you know, they brief me and make sure that I know just enough to not sound too stupid and to not say things that are too inaccurate. And that's about it.
Is this something that's happened recently, or is this sort of an organic process of the health department gaining a higher priority not only within the community but also getting the resources from council, you know, adding staff, having these experts in these specific fields? I don't remember this 20 years ago in Summit County. And how did it come about like you joined 3 years ago and all of a sudden here we are talking about all these amazing things?
Well, to give credit where credit's due, Steve Jenkins, who was my predecessor, built a really good department, and he hired very good staff. He probably didn't talk about these issues as much as I personally believe they need to be talked about. And that isn't unusual to Steve or our department. It really is the traditional role that public health has taken. We tend to believe that, you know, we do our work behind the scenes. We keep people healthy. We make sure that water is drinkable, air is breathable, those kinds of things, and we don't talk about it. I have a different philosophy. We spend tax money, and I think that the community and the public and the taxpayers need to know what we do. And so I get out a little bit more and talk about it than Steve did. But, you know, the Summit County Health Department has been a good health department for a long time.
And what is the role of the health department? Because, I mean, with this huge spectrum that you have to cover and this multitude of issues, are you regulatory? Are you trying to shift the collective consciousness on wellness? I mean, what is the purview of the health department?
All of the above. You know, our mission is to protect health and safety. And those are the criteria that we base our decisions on. And so, if we, for example, are looking at an area that is requesting septic systems, we will go through a process that allows us to assess whether or not a conventional septic system, an advanced septic system, or no septic system requiring to hook up to sewer will protect health and safety. And so that includes, when you start looking at the issue of health and safety, that includes things like preparedness. It includes things like Katie Mullally's Thriving Lifestyles program. It also includes women's health, vaccines, all of those issues. But certainly there's also a regulatory role. You know, in particular, the issues with water. We're in a position now where, you know, we have several neighborhoods, in particular in Snyderville in Western Summit County, that are on septic system. And these are big neighborhoods that had the time been different, they were built 20 and 30 years ago, they would not be approved today. And those septic systems would not be approved. And recently we denied a large number of septic systems in a development out at Silver Creek. And if you've noticed, there's now sewer line being laid along I-80 over to Silver Creek towards the industrial park in Silver Creek. We can't take all the credit, but one of the dominoes that fell to get sewer to that area is the fact that our department denied septic permits because the soil wasn't adequate to perk, and there were the density of those septic systems, proposed systems, was too high. So that's one of the things we do. You know, we don't do a huge amount of regulation, although, you know, one thing I haven't mentioned is food. We got to have healthy food. We got to have clean restaurants. We have an individual that does restaurant inspections and food handler training that is very, very good, and we're just hiring. We've got another person going to be doing the same thing coming on board in about 2 weeks. You know, we protect health and safety, and that's what we base our work on.
Mm. Okay, let's talk about air quality. It seems to be something that's in the news all the time, and there's always a distinction between the PM2.5 or the particulate matter that tends to raise its ugly head during winter inversions. And then there's ozone, which we see higher levels of during the summertime. So since we're kind of coming to the end of the inversion season, let's talk a little bit about particulate matter. And let's talk about it specifically here in Summit County, because although, you know, I know that we don't reach that federal limits for, you know, what's dangerous to have, you can see it in the air during the winter. So yeah. What's going on there?
Well, so first of all, let me kind of set the stage for air quality. When I mentioned that we have a county that's engaged and that we do things that we are not required to do, air quality is a great example of that. The state monitors air quality in communities that are over 50,000. We're about 40,000, 38 to 40,000 in the county. So the state doesn't monitor air quality here. The state and feds become engaged in areas that are non-attainment areas that exceed federal standards at a relatively frequent rate with respect to specific pollutants. We are not a non-attainment area, so the feds and the state don't work here to any great extent. So that said, I frequently was getting requests from the community wanting to know what our PM2.5 level is, for example, or our ozone level. We didn't have monitors. We went to the Board of Health, and they authorized purchase of two PM2.5 monitors and two ozone monitors.
And those are not cheap.
They are not cheap. And so we are monitoring air, and people can go to summitcountyhealth.org and click on environmental health and then outdoor air, and you'll see real-time numbers for PM2.5 and ozone. That's because we have a community and we have support from the Board of Health and the council to do this stuff. You know, and that's a big deal. That is really unusual. And when I talk about us having support to do our work, that's what I'm referring to. So specifically with respect to PM2.5, as you said, it's the winter pollutant. It's the one that you see really nasty levels in the Salt Lake Valley and Tri-County in different areas. Heber has some issues as well, Wasatch County. The federal standard is 35 micrograms per cubic meter. We almost never exceed that standard. We've been monitoring since we got these monitors. We've been following and tracking now going on nearing the end of 4 years. I can think of only 2 days where we've exceeded that standard, and it was both related to events that had to do with big dust storms coming in from the West Desert, and we saw peaks. Wasatch Front saw the peaks as well, and they happened to be in the summer. Those peaks were in the summer, not in the winter. So I think the message is, yeah, you can see a little bit of haze, but we don't exceed the federal standard. My feeling, though, and I've said this on the radio before, and I've been quoted in the paper saying this, now is not the time to sit idle on this, no pun intended. We are fortunate. We're an island of good air in the wintertime. We're surrounded by counties that are non-attainment areas. We're surrounded by counties that frequently exceed the standard. Now is the time to take a look at things like wood burning, things like, you know, I'm going to, on this program in just a minute, announce a new effort to address vehicles that might not be burning clean or running clean. Now's the time to do that. I think our future, we've got a little snapshot here where growth has slowed a little bit. Things to seem to be picking up. There's some relatively large developments being proposed in the basin. Now is the time to look at whether or not we begin to restrict wood burning and new development, for example. The data are very compelling. I've been gathering data with the hopes of presenting those data to the Snyderville Planning Commission in the next month or so. Data are very compelling that wood smoke is not good for you. And so that's one of the conversations we'll be having moving forward.
So wood smoke, is there, you know, we have in recent decades put things like catalytic converters in our wood stoves. Mm-hmm. Is there any way of burning wood that is clean?
Yeah, you can clean them, and some of them have scrubbers, and there are even pellet stoves that direct vent into the house. You don't even have to vent them outside. And so there are ways to make it clean, and certainly the new wood-burning stoves are much cleaner than the old ones.
But not clean enough.
But not clean enough. And you know, the term clean is relative. People are throwing
clean
around
coal.
The terms clean coal and clean diesel. They're cleaner than they used to be. But clean is probably not the appropriate word. They're still significant contributors to pollution.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the Salt Lake Valley, they've created the ordinance that, you know, they're phasing out wood stoves unless it's your primary source of heat, then you can get what's it called?
Waiver.
yeah, a waiver. Yeah. There we go. But here, I would tend to argue that really there's no one that uses wood as their primary source of heat, maybe in some of the reaches of Summit County.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Probably not too many in the western part of the county, but a significant number in the eastern part of the county. It's important for me to note that as we move forward with the discussions of wood burning, we're going to be focusing in western Summit County. And specifically,
greater density.
Yeah, specifically, I want to talk with the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. When I first talked about this issue a few months ago publicly, I got half a dozen phone calls from residents in eastern Summit County who were concerned that we were going to restrict their primary source of heat. And that is absolutely not the intent of any of this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's good for them to know,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So what do you say? Are you getting a lot of blowback from people in western Summit County that say things like the fire creates – it's the hearth of our home and our family. It's so important. We're not going to let that go. We'll do other things. We're not going to let that one go.
I haven't yet, but we will.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know that. Tim's got a wood-burning fireplace, right?
I do.
Yeah. It's a great smell. It's a mm-hmm. great feeling. It adds a certain ambiance to your space.
And, I think about all those wood fires that I have been in front of all these years.
Yeah.
I mean, burning wood has been a big part of my life.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, most
yeah.
of us when we grew up, it was burning the leaves and burning the wood pile
right.
and having fires and that
right.
whole thing. I mean, that was
right.
part of our family tradition or
right.
part of our family culture.
That's right.
And then so it's changing that culture. But I think the arguments that you make and that I've heard with regard to the toxicity of wood smoke is very compelling.
It is very compelling. One of the things that I learned at the air quality forum that you were a part of, Tim, I had been looking from my position in the health department, I'd been looking for a clear, measurable indicator of why we needed to talk wood smoke. And I was struggling coming up with that because you don't necessarily see strong correlations between burning wood and PM 2.5, for example. The compelling argument was made by Dr. Mensch that it's more of an issue of personal space, that the smoke is harmful. And when your neighbor is burning smoke and the smoke leaves the house and then lowers over your space, there's a health risk, a specific measurable health risk. And so I've been looking at some data related to that, and those data are very compelling. And in many ways, it's not very different than secondhand smoke and regulation of cigarettes and tobacco use.
It just smells better.
It's a fairly – yes, it does. But it's a fairly similar issue. It's about personal space and health risk.
And if we are able to – put some of these measures into place. I mean, let's just project out in the future and go, okay, so, you know, we don't allow wood burning fireplaces and we get people to make sure that their emission light is, you know, not on and they're burning as clean as they can in their car. You know, can we make a difference here in Summit County and Park City? Or are we, you know, going to get overrun by the various, you know, inversions that surround us and the lousy air from all these surrounding areas? I mean, do we stand a chance?
Yeah, I think – I absolutely think we do. You know, there's – if you don't believe you have any chance, there's probably no reason to do anything.
Right.
But we do, I think, have a very good probability of having an impact. And in particular, PM 2.5, when the inversions are sitting over the Wasatch Front, sitting over us as well – those particulates aren't moving from the Wasatch Front. They're trapped down there. And so the argument that we don't control our own destiny with respect to air and that we're in fact being impacted by the big city just isn't reality. We impact our air. And Tim just mentioned the Check Engine Light campaign. That's the campaign I want to mention. Today we are launching a campaign to educate the community with respect to check engine lights. We don't do emissions testing here, and we don't for a variety of reasons. The biggest one is that when you run the numbers on the proportion of new vehicles, the numbers of miles driven within our county by Summit County vehicles, vehicles registered in Summit County, and then the proportion of vehicles that are actually emissions are improved through an emissions testing program, the numbers don't jive. We're convinced that the program, an emissions testing program, would have very little impact and would cost a lot of money. We think a better approach is to begin an education campaign to have people know what a check engine light means. And instead of looking at the check engine light and saying, oh, crap, you know, this is going to cost me a fortune, and not tying that check engine light to a specific outcome, we're trying to let people know that the check engine light means your car isn't clean. You're not getting good gas mileage. Your particulate matter has probably gone up. Your exhaust at the tailpipe has gone up. And the reason that you should address it is to protect your environment. I had a personal experience. I had an old Tacoma truck that the check engine light came on, and I didn't think too much about it. Drove it for a while, checked my gas mileage, went in and got in this case it was an oxygen sensor, got it replaced, and my gas mileage went up 3 miles per gallon instantly.
Wow.
And so the check engine light, you get them addressed, they pay for themselves. The important thing that we're trying to let people know is that it impacts the cleanliness of the car, and it's important to address it when it comes on.
So the first thing people will say, well, I see it come on, and the first thing I think about is how much is it going to cost me just to get the diagnostic test. What does that run?
Well, the tests oftentimes are not very much at all. In fact, there's some dealers that do them for free, depending upon where you take your car. But I'm generally $50 to $75, and then if a new catalytic converter, you might be looking at $400. You know, these aren't necessarily cheap repairs, but when you think about the longevity of your engine and gas mileage and the impact on the environment, you know, the numbers aren't so staggering at that point in time.
Oh, I see people buying used cars, and because they're up here and there are no emissions testing, they'll cut the catalytic converter off if it's faulty. Yeah. And that's that, because they say it's an expensive
I've heard about that. I've actually never known anybody who's done it, but I've heard about it. Cars don't – I guarantee you those cars are not running well. One of the things that determines how an engine runs is what sort of compression is coming back into the engine. Mm-hmm. Catalytic converters removing it changes all of that. And so they're probably getting horrendous mileage. I think those are rare examples, though. I've heard those stories. I don't think it happens a lot.
Well, it's interesting because I've had a personal experience with that with my 16-year-old getting a new car. When you're in high school, you buy the crappiest car that you can afford, or the best car that your crappy bank account can afford. And oftentimes they come without a catalytic converter. We've just been through this. And
interesting, and
also mechanics in the area will say, well, it's an expensive repair and there's no emissions testing here in Summit County, so just don't worry about it.
Well, then you just hit on an important point. One of the components of this program is to actually have a training for the mechanics. And we've arranged somebody to come up from the state and from the clean air program at Weber State University and come up and do some training specific to this. I wasn't aware that it was as widespread as it is, so certainly we will need to address it in those trainings. And then, Tim mentioned whether or not we take action on specific regulatory things. There are ways to address it outside of emissions testing that we can talk about.
Okay, great. Quickly, with just a minute left, Rich, can you go over ozone? I know that's hard in a minute, but high ozone here in the summer.
Yeah, we do have high ozone in the summer. Ozone moves around. It's a big blob that moves around. And so in the summertime, we actually are impacted to some extent by the Wasatch Front. We do monitor ozone, and Tim mentioned to me or discussed with me just before this broadcast the question about doing advisories related to ozone. We will be issuing advisories. They'll be online and maybe occasionally on the radio. I want to point out these aren't regulatory. We don't regulate anything. This is educational. It's like a food label. If somebody has an opportunity to exercise in the morning or the evening instead of at 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and they know there's high ozones when the heat is high, high ozone levels at 3 or 4 in the afternoon, then maybe they can have information to make a choice, a more informed choice. And that's all this is. We're actually working with realtors and with the travel council to make sure that we develop those messages in a way that's effective with respect to education.
Good stuff. And you can find out more about ozone on the summitcounty.org.
Summitcountyhealth.org
website, because it is very interesting, sometimes created by vegetation and heat at the same time, other times by tailpipe emissions. So,
that's right.
All right. Well, we could have talked to you for the rest of the hour, Rich Bullo, but thanks for coming in for this time.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We'll talk to the academic decathlon team headed to the national competition later this month in Hawaii, of all the great places.
Hola, soy Jorge, uno de los anfitriones de Cada Domingo. Escuche Cada Domingo en KPCW 91.9 FM todos los domingos en las tardes de las 7 a las 10 p.m. Tenemos música, información de la comunidad y perdidos y encontrados. Por favor, denle like o me gusta a la página Facebook de Cada Domingo. Cada Domingo, solo en Park City, solo KPCW. Hi, I'm Jorge, one of the hosts for KPCW's Cada Domingo. You can hear Cada Domingo every Sunday evening on KPCW 91.9 FM from 7 to 10 p.m., where you can hear music, community information, and lost and founds. Please like the KPCW Cada Domingo Facebook page. Cada Domingo, only in Park City, only on KPCW.
Winter is in full swing at the Utah Olympic Park. The park is open daily from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Explore the Alf Ingen Ski Museum and the Eccles 2002 Olympic Winter Games Museum. Take a guided Olympic heritage tour or watch athletes train while enjoying a hot beverage from the Silver Bean Cafe. Info and rates are available online at UtahOlympicLegacy.com. Parking and admission is free. Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing sport and recreation opportunities.
Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Last week, I spoke with a couple from the academic decathlon team from Park City High School and their advisor, Mr. Ed Potts. They just returned from a very exciting state competition, and they're set to go off to national competition in Hawaii. Now, you wouldn't know everything that makes up an academic decathlon competition, but they joined me to talk about this, and here's that interview. So I'm here with Mara Williams, Zach Laufer, and Ed Potts, the advisor of the academic decathlon team at Park City High School. And they've had exciting, on the edge of your seat kind of competition recently, a state competition. And Ed, maybe you can just take us through, since you really have the most experience probably with the club. You've been the advisor for how many years now?
I think we've done this for eight years, so helping out. Craziest state competitions ever for lots of reasons. It is a decathlon, so there are 10 different events. One of the last events they do is this super quiz, which is the biggest team aspect of it. And it was this very dramatic kind of fashion where we actually ended up winning that event in a come from behind last minute. It all came down to the last question and we got it right and we won and it was awesome and it was great. And we knew it was going to be close between us and Bingham High School to win the overall state competition. We just didn't know how close it was going to be. And so when they announced on Saturday that Bingham had edged us out, we were kind of a little bummed. But the state director, Ed Rogers, he said that there's a chance we could get an at-large bid. So there are only 40 of the 50 states who compete in academic decathlon nationally. So that leaves 10 spots. And what they do is they take all the second place finishers from those 40 states, they line them up, and then the top 10 scores advance and get to go to nationals. So that's how we were lucky enough to get in and get an invite to Hawaii. So
okay. So is the scoring somewhat subjective?
A little bit. There are, so out of the 10 events, two of them are subjective. Three. There's a speech. The students have to prepare a speech about any topic they want and deliver that to two judges, and then they're evaluated on that. Then there's an interview, which is essentially like a job interview. They have to prepare a resume. The people across the table are told to essentially treat this like they were applying for a job with their company, and so they ask them questions and see how they handle themselves. And then the third subjective is essay. So they have an essay topic they write about. But the interesting thing about academic decathlon is every year they release a topic, and then all of those categories have a connection to that topic. So this year it was all about World War I. So the history, the science, the economics all had a connection back to World War I.
And I remember hearing, Zach, that you had just joined the team several weeks before the state finals.
Yeah.
We know that you're a stellar student and a possible presidential scholar, right?
Yeah.
And so you probably had a fair idea already of a lot of these topics, but how did you go about preparing when you only had 2 weeks? What type of preparation is it?
Well, some of the subjects, such as science or math, I didn't have to study much for. It transferred easily from my school experience. But for things like music and art, where I was clueless on a lot of it, I basically, you're given packets. They're like 90-page packets that are just all the information you need to know. And basically what I did is each night I would read half of a packet or a full packet and just try and commit that to memory. And once I completed all the packets, I went back and read. They have cram kits, which are just condensed versions of the packets. So I would read those after I read the art and music ones, basically.
So out of curiosity, you're quite an academic student. So why had you not joined the academic decathlon previous to this?
I think it was mainly a time thing. Mr. Nagel, who's the other advisor, approached me at the beginning of the year about joining. And we just kind of came to the agreement that I didn't have enough time to devote to it, because I had to apply for colleges and I have a bunch of AP classes. But it's something that's always interested me. I just never found the time to do it until now.
It's important to note that Zach finished third overall. Out of all the state rankings, he was the third place finisher. So
that's great. That's cool. Well, congratulations.
Thanks.
And I hear it doesn't take any time at all to apply for colleges. So, okay, Mara Williams, were you around when that last question that Mr. Potts is talking about was posed? Do you remember what the last question was?
In the super quiz, yes, I was actually in the honors category competing with Zach and our other teammate, Pauline. And I remember the last question, we all saw it and we breathed a sigh of relief. But we didn't know, we couldn't see the scores that were posted behind us. We didn't know how close the teams were and how close the competition was. And we turned around after we answered the question, we got it correctly, and we turned around and our team was cheering and there were other teams staring at the ground looking very bummed out. And so I was present for that and it was quite a cool experience.
Mm-hmm. So what was the question?
It was speaking about which of these artists utilized color in their painting for expression. And they listed a list of paintings from World War I, such as a Picasso painting or a Matisse painting. And I believe that all three of us got that question mm-hmm. correct. It was Majoli from Picasso, which utilizes no color. It's basically a bunch of cubes that are all brown.
Mm-hmm. Which would follow suit with World War One and maybe the dreariness and the drudgery. Is that kind of so how exactly did you say it? Was it a one word answer? Was it you had to also explain your reasoning?
What they had us do was put a answer on a Scantron, and they would have a judge, usually a coach from another team, that would come and look at it, see which of the three got it correct, and they would go post that on a scoreboard.
Okay. So is it really, does it produce a lot of adrenaline? It seems like a very exciting competition. Mr. Potts, maybe you could talk about
that. Well, I was in the stands watching, and yes, my adrenaline was cranking because it was close. It was back and forth. There was Copper Hills was right dead even with us, and then there was Bingham, and then there was another school, the Da Vinci Academy, which is a charter school out of Ogden. So that was like, you know, one round they would go up, and then the next round we would go up, and then another round. You know, it was just back and forth. And we had, I think, a 1-point lead at that last question. And so if we all three of them got it right, I mean, we sealed it. There was no way any other team could catch us. But if just one of them got it right, there was a chance that one of the other teams could catch us. So it was really nerve-wracking, but fun. And it was great. And it, as far as academics go, that was the most excited you could see kids get about answering a question right on a test. So.
So you answered it correctly. You were cheering, but you didn't realize that Bingham also answered it correctly. Or was it just the compilation, Zach, of all of the other scores together that you weren't aware of at the time?
For me, I didn't know. I know when we went to take our questions, because you do it in three sections based on your GPA. So when we went up, I believe we were either down by very little, but I lost track of points immediately. And when our team started cheering after the last question, I stood up and walked so I could see the scores, because I didn't know what was going on still. It still took me a minute because I looked at everyone's scores, and then I finally realized ours was the highest and we had actually won it, because I thought we had thrown it at the beginning because we missed two or three questions in a row, all of us at once.
Okay. This is interesting. I think that, you know, those of us in Park City have been aware of academic decathlon for so many years, and Park City High School always seeming to win the state and even place well in the national championship. But I think we sort of think it's a we out there, the great unknown. We think it is a trivia contest or something. But when you're explaining about how you go up and you're the order is in the order of how your GPA. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So each team, you have three GPA categories. There's technically 0 to, I think it's 2.99, and then 3.0 to 3.74 is the middle category, and then 3.75 to 4.0. So each team, you have to have three kids in each category that'll compete in all the same tests. Everyone takes the same test. But then Super Quiz, you get three sets of questions, and all of the lowest GPA kids will do their questions first, then the middle do their questions, then finally honors.
So the obvious question, I think, is that are there less difficult questions for kids with lower GPAs? I mean, that would seem weird, but...
No, there's not. In fact, okay. The way you win this competition, and this is why we've had success, is your lower GPA category kids. I mean, you have... Essentially, you have to find three kids who are very bright, very intelligent, but for whatever reason have never shown it through their grades in school. And so a lot of our time as advisors, Mr. Nagel and I, are just trying to find those three kids who are just smart, but their grades have never reflected it. And so the questions are just as hard. There's no degree in them. It's just you know, they're the same questions that every kid in that same category for all the schools competing will have. So
that is a very valuable point. And it sounds a lot like, you know, what they're doing with the PC CAPS program, where they're not looking for kids who've already taken AP physics. They're looking for kids who maybe just don't fit into a normal classroom sort of situation.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that we have given opportunities for a lot of kids over the years to prove to everybody that, look, like I am smart. Like, and no one believes me, but I can hang with all the smartest kids in the school. And we were lucky. We've had three great kids in this category this year: Carter Pochnock, Tony London, and actually my son Noah Potts was the third member of that category. And they were the highest scoring kids in that category across the state. So they did a great job.
Wow, that's great. So just juniors and seniors in academic decathlon or sophomores as well?
Sophomores, and then my son is a freshman. So it's all four ranges. But we tend to have more juniors and seniors because, as Zach pointed out, some of the stuff you just learn by the classes you're taking at school is going to benefit you. And so seniors are going to have all of that education, all that math that they need to have success, where a sophomore is going to struggle through some of those questions.
So. Okay. Mara, what do you specialize in? What are your favorite subjects, and why are you attracted to academic decathlon?
Actually, Mr. Nagel approached me. It was probably 2 or 3 months ago before their regional competition, and he had noticed that I was a fairly good speaker, a fairly good interviewer, and that is what he told me to specialize in. He says, we need to bring our subjective test grades up, and you can do the speech, you can do the interview. And I found that that's what I like most. I enjoy the human interaction instead of just sitting and taking a test. But I also enjoy the science section because of classes that I've had at school, like Zach said. And those are my specialties.
Okay, so then I'm still a little confused about how it goes. Do you then just do certain categories when you're at the competition, like the speech category and maybe the science, but you skip out on some of the other things?
Every member of every team takes every single test. And usually they have the speech and the interview done on another day, but every kid piles together in a room and they all take every test after another. It's the exact same test. And I think that's what's challenging about academic decathlon, is the fact that there is no variety. You have to be well-versed in every single subject.
Right. So there are then, say, three of you answering one question, and you all need to answer it correctly, or you don't, like, look at the guy who's best in art history and say, you answer. Is it everyone has to answer?
Yeah.
Okay, Zach, I'm interested. You're kind of a math and science kid.
Yeah.
That's your specialty. So what kind of math questions would there be about World War I?
Math is kind of the odd one out. It's not specializing in World War I. It's just general math. This year's focus was trigonometry, I think, and then just algebra. So the questions would be, it might give you a really long chain of numbers with a bunch of different powers of x in it, and you have to find one factor of it. And it was the hardest one, in my opinion, because there's fewer questions, but it's the same amount of time. But I didn't finish. A lot of kids didn't finish. It's just, the math itself isn't that difficult. It's, you have to do everything so quickly, and you have to know it immediately as you see it. And there's just not room for margin of error in there.
That's interesting, because didn't you score a perfect score on one of your entrance, or one of the ACT?
On the SAT, I did.
On the SAT,
yeah.
In math.
Yeah.
And you still didn't finish this other one. And
nope.
I'm wondering about how academic decathlon prepares you. Unfortunately, we live in this world now where it's so important to test well for the ACT and the SAT. Is there a lot of transfer from the academic decathlon?
Yeah, I think mainly in test-taking skills. A lot of the knowledge is not going to be that useful beyond academic decathlon, but learning how to answer questions and problem solve through tests you learn it from AD, and it helps a lot.
Mm-hmm. And also being sort of efficient with time.
Yeah.
Is there a time factor? Okay. So, Mara, talk a little bit about the rest of your team and, you know, who has some particular strength that might be interesting, or who, helped you in some way during the test, if there's something that stands out for you.
Definitely. As a team, we didn't meet actually before the state competition. We went in, and I had never met Zach before, and I'd never met another kid on our team because we had cemented the team just
so
a
late.
Few weeks before. And what I thought was interesting was the fact that we did all bond together very quickly. We all became kind of nerdy best friends, in a sense. And we all have very different strengths in academics. And what was nice is that the fact that we did get to help each other. And Carter Poshnak, who was mentioned, he helped me very much in music, which is his strength. And I think that, you know, the fact that we all have different strengths, different weaknesses, allows us to become a team very much more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very unique kind of team setting in contrast to other sports teams or other organizations in the school.
Right, right. There's something that bonds you together, maybe just that thing in your personality that says, hey, I want to do academic decathlon. And Ed, maybe this is a question for you, and that is, what type of kid, is there a stereotype of the type of kid that is interested in academic decathlon?
We try to find people who read a lot and read kind of quickly and retain a lot of that information. As English teachers, both Mr. Nagel and myself, we come across a lot of these kids in our classes. So, that's who we try to recruit from, because we notice you read a lot. You read a lot of it in a short amount of time. That's ultimately what is going to lead to success. As Zach pointed out, he was able to read through the material in a couple weeks and try to commit as much of it to memory. And so that's really what I think is the most important skill, but also problem solving and just good test taking strategies. There's just some of those kids who have that natural ability to look at and say, well, it couldn't be that possible choice, so it has to be this one. I mean, those are the kids that we look for. So we tend to evaluate the plan and the PSAT tests. We'll go to the counselors and say who scored well, and then we'll look at their GPAs, and that's who we try to recruit to be a part of the team.
Okay, so test-taking skills are definitely a part of it. Okay, Zach, what are you going to do to prepare for Hawaii, other than, get a new bathing suit?
What I'm doing now is going back through and reading every packet again, and I think I'm going to prep to do that. And then Carter Pochnok has actually set up, he's asked some teachers to come in and kind of give us just shortcuts and tricks to doing the problems quickly, because none of us is perfect in any area, so we're having Mr. Nordfeldt come in and teach us shortcuts to math. Mr. Mulek is going to teach us the biology. So at this point, it's more just kind of trying to round ourselves out with everything that we didn't get time to prepare for state.
And the theme is the same again, World War I? Okay, so you're not learning new things. And I suppose science is a little bit like math, where it's not the science according to World War One.
Okay, the focus this year was on genetics, heredity, and that's because most of the major advancements in heredity and genetics took place during that time frame. So,
okay, very interesting. All right, well, best of luck at Nationals, it'll be exciting to hear. Make sure you let us know.
Oh, for sure.
And that was Zach Laufer, Mara Williams, and Ed Potts, the advisor of the Academic Decathlon team. And we wish them the best of luck in Hawaii. Also, they're always looking for funding, and that was one of the final things they talked about. You can reach them through Park City High School. And if you're interested, if you're one of those people that would have loved to have done Academic Decathlon, you can help fund these kids going off to Hawaii. So we'll take a break now, and we'll be back to thank our underwriters. You're listening to The Mountain Life, only in Park City, only on KPCW.
Hi, this is Eric Karshner, Assistant General Manager of Park Meadows Country Club and sponsor of The Mountain Life on KPCW. Park Meadows Country Club is Park City's in-town private country club, just minutes from historic Main Street. Golf, social, and dining memberships are available. 649-2460 or parkmeadowscc.com.
The Glittertind at Stein Erickson Lodge is a proud supporter of KPCW. The Glittertind restaurant offers regional American cuisine with Chef Zane Holmquist's seasonal menus. Located mid-mountain at Deer Valley Resort, the Glittertind serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily. Sunday brunch with live music. Reservations recommended. 645-6455.
This is Dana Edwards on behalf of Vail Resorts and Cannons Resort supporting KPCW. This year, we developed partnerships with 25 local nonprofits to support programs like the fourth grade program at Swanner Preserve and Eco Center. Every fourth grader in Summit County will experience Utah's ecosystem firsthand and see science come to life through infield classes. Thanks to Swanner for making science cool.
Thanks for listening to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak here with Tim Henney. Want to thank our underwriters:
Park City Clinic, Utah Olympic Legacy Foundation, Prudential Utah Real Estate, San Francisco Design, Stein Erickson Lodge and Spa, Grand Valley Bank, and Park Meadows Country Club.
And as always, tune in tomorrow for Cool Science Radio at 9 a.m.